Welcome to this descriptive guide to human evolution at the Natural History Museum. This guide combines descriptions of key exhibits and explanatory text from the wall panels. It's intended to be downloaded on your smartphone or MP3 player before you arrive, or streamed via the free Wi-Fi in the gallery. If you encounter problems downloading, please speak with a member of Visitor Services. There are two versions of the guide to choose from, one without and one with orientation that helps you get from one stop to the next. This version, with orientation, begins with directions from the Exhibition Road entrance to the museum. Once inside the gallery, there are 8 separate stops. You can pause the audio between each display to listen to the orientation, and then start it again once you've reached the next stop. When the orientation is quite long, it may be best to listen to it in stages. The whole tour will take around 35 minutes.
Journey 1. Directions to the gallery from Exhibition Road. The easiest way to approach the Human Evolution Gallery is via the Exhibition Road entrance to the museum. There are glass double swing doors. Pass through the left one and then turn immediately left. An attendant at the desk some 20 paces ahead may ask to check your bags. At the security desk, turn right. After a couple of paces, turn right again. You're standing at one end of a long lower ground floor foyer. At this end, to your left, is an information desk where staff can help if you have any questions. There's a bench facing it to your right. At the far end of the foyer, just past glass double doors on your right, is a cloakroom. Bags and coats may be left here for a small charge, and if you'd like someone to look after your guide dog while you visit, ask for assistance here. Opposite the cloakroom is an accessible toilet, a toilet with baby changing facilities and a lift up to the ground floor level. In the middle of the foyer, to the left, and directly opposite the glass entrance doors, a wide staircase with a central handrail leads up 15 steps to a semicircular landing some 3 or 4 paces across. From the landing, 3 more steps take us up to the ground floor level. At the top of the stairs, straight ahead, is the Earth Hall, a vast, dark, echoey atrium with an arched ceiling and an otherworldly soundtrack. There's a cafe over to the right. The entrance to Human Evolution is to the left. If you turn so that the vast atrium extends to your right, you need to walk forward for about 15 paces. The wide entrance to Human Evolution is on the right, just as you're about to pass under a low white ceiling. You may like to pause the audio here and start it again when you've arrived at the entrance.
Stop 1. The origin of our species. Our tour starts with an exhibit outside the Human Evolution Gallery. To the left of its large square opening is a timeline, a wall painted in 8 horizontal stripes. A low plinth juts out at shin height from the bottom of the wall. The bottom stripe is very dark grey and is dated 7 million years ago. Each stripe represents 1 million years, and the stripes get progressively lighter grey towards the top, which is labelled today. We belong to a group known as the hominins. It includes all the human species that ever existed, the ones that evolved after our branch of the tree of life split from the line that led to the chimpanzee and the bonobo about 7 million years ago. Attached to the wall are 17 reproduction skulls or partial skulls, ranging in colour from dark brown to tan to yellow to match the original fossils, although the models are a different colour where parts have been reconstructed from other information. Each skull represents a different hominin species. These are some of the ancient relatives we know about so far. Other names on the wall show species that we know about but don't yet have a skull. At the bottom of the wall is the small, cracked, stony brown skull of an early hominin, Sahelanthropus chadensis. 2 sections above, around 5 million years ago, is Ardipithecus ramidus, a slightly larger skull with more pronounced cheeks. Research suggests they ate nuts, leaves, fruit, and insects, and that this species probably lived in woodland. Homo sapiens is in the top band, dated today. The pale yellow skull is perhaps two times the size of the earliest hominin, with a flatter face, even teeth, and a smooth brow. Between the top and bottom bands, a number of different clusters of skulls are spread out across the width of the wall, reflecting a complex network of relations. Modern humans, Homo sapiens, are the only surviving human species. But exactly who our direct ancestors are within this family tree is a subject of scientific debate, and new and exciting discoveries are being made all the time. In the last 2 million years, there have been at least 8 other human species, including Homo neanderthalensis and Homo erectus. This wall display shows not only the complexity of our evolutionary story, but also how that story is continually being revised in the light of new evidence.
We now turn our attention to the gallery itself. The Human Evolution Gallery is a rectangular room about 23 metres long and 9 metres wide. A 2-metre-wide corridor runs like a spine down its centre, with openings on both sides. Large print guides are available at each end of the corridor, that is at the entrance and the exit to the gallery. The exhibits are arranged into 3 zones, with seating available in each, should you need it. Zone 1, Meet the Hominins, is on the left of the corridor, its entrance marked with a large orange backlit panel. Zone 2, Becoming Human, is to the right, its entrance panel blue. Zone 3, What Makes Us Human, spans both sides of the corridor at the far end of the space. It's distinguished by the colour purple. These zones are not closed rooms, but rather clusters of display cases divided by partition walls. Some walls are full height, others waist high, and some pierced by small windows, allowing a glimpse of an object or display from a different and perhaps unexpected angle. Like the Wall of Skulls, the gallery has its own internal timeline. At the beginning of the story, this end of the gallery, the walls and display cabinets are painted a very dark grey, but they lighten as we move through time towards the far end. You can pause the audio until you're ready to enter the gallery.
Journey 2. We enter the gallery itself through an opening some 2 metres square, just to the right of the skull timeline. There's a solid dark grey wall on the left of the corridor, with Human Evolution written in white block capitals. Over to the right of the corridor is a waist-high wall, with pairs of heads and skulls displayed along its top, facing away from us. We'll go inside Zone 2 to explore them later. Follow the solid wall on your left until it ends. It's about 7 or 8 paces. Turn left through the wide entrance into Zone 1. You pass an orange backlit text panel to your right. Turn immediately left again, so that you're now on the other side of the solid wall. A glass display case is built into the wall. It's about 2.5 metres wide and 2 metres high. The glass going all the way down to the floor. Inside, 3 skeletons face us.
Stop 2. Bipedalism. There have been many hominins in the past, and all but Homo sapiens are long gone. Now, our closest living relatives are the chimpanzee and the bonobo. They are non-hominins, from whom we and our ancient hominin relatives differ in a number of ways. The 3 skeletons on display here allow us to examine some of these differences. To the left is a male chimpanzee. About 1.2 metres high, he stands on 2 legs but stoops forwards, long arms hanging in front of bent knees. His legs are shorter than his arms, the feet with elongated big toes that angle away from the other toes as our thumbs angle away from our fingers. His wrists and hands are big and strong, designed for knuckle walking. His skull is squat with a protruding jaw. The skull slopes up at the back, where his straight spine enters, which has the effect of thrusting the head forward. These features suggest that this chimpanzee is not normally bipedal and walks on 2 limbs instead of 4 only for short periods. The chimp also has sharp canines. Their lower first premolars actually sharpen the upper canines when the jaw moves, and they reveal their canines in a show of aggression. For these and other reasons, chimpanzees are not classified as hominins.
The central skeleton is a hominin, Australopithecus sediba. Scientists have reconstructed this skeleton based on real fossil remains found in South Africa, and which are about 1.95 million years old. The real remains are caramel brown in colour. The rest of the skeleton has been reconstructed from other evidence and is coloured white. The posture of this skeleton is more upright than the chimpanzee, though it stands no taller. The spine is more curved, and the hips are narrower and more in line with it, so that it seems more naturally upright, though it still leans forwards a little. Australopithecus sediba has quite a small cranium and body, but long upper limbs. The arm on the left real, the arm to the right, a white reconstruction. Fingers and toes shorter than the chimp's. The third skeleton, standing on the right, is of a female modern human. This skeleton is about 150 years old. She stands some 1.6 metres tall, her skull larger than her neighbour's, but with smaller, more evenly sized teeth. Her spine noticeably enters at the base of her skull, so the head is held up, not thrust forward. The spine forms an S shape, keeping the body balanced in this upright position and absorbing the impact of each step. The toes are aligned and the feet have arches, which again are designed for walking rather than gripping. Like her fellow hominin to the left, her thigh bones slant inwards from hip to knee, transferring her weight through her knees down to her feet. The ability to walk upright may have bestowed survival benefits, such as being able to spot dangerous predators earlier, more effective travel over long distances, and perhaps crucially, it freed up hominins' hands to do other tasks, such as carry food and make and use tools. Comparing skeletons, dating and analysing fossil bones and teeth are all key techniques to understand how we're related. In addition, DNA, the genetic material that determines the makeup of all living things, can sometimes survive in fossil remains. This can tell us huge amounts about both our living non-hominin and extinct hominin relatives. We now know we share around 98% of our DNA with chimpanzees. We would have had even more of our DNA in common with our extinct hominin relatives, such as the central skeleton of these three, Australopithecus sediba.
Journey 2. Turn left so the cabinet containing the skeletons is on your right and follow the cabinet to its edge. The next exhibit is housed in a small display case at 45 degrees diagonally to your left. It's directly opposite the entrance to Zone 1. A glass box about 50 centimetres square sits on top of a hip-high grey plinth. The plinth slopes in as it joins the glass box. Stop 3. A small but important tooth. Held up towards us on a thin wire so that it seems to hover in the centre of the glass box is a tiny but significant specimen. Indeed, at about 3.5 million years old, this is the oldest specimen in the museum's hominin collection, a small dark brown tooth with a worn but still pointed crown. Originally thought to have belonged to a monkey, it was reclassified in the 1980s after the discovery of a skeleton known as Lucy, the fossil that confirmed our ancient relatives walked upright. Its conical shape and wear suggest it is a tooth belonging to Australopithecus afarensis. Because they're made partly of hard-wearing enamel, teeth tend to survive through time remarkably well, retaining important information about their long-dead owners. From looking at their shape and wear, analysing their surfaces and the fossilised plaque they often carry, scientists can reveal the owner's species, age, state of health and diet. The evolution of hominin teeth has been influenced by what they ate and later on by their use of tools and fire. Hominins tend to have smaller canine teeth than non-hominins. Scientists think this is probably due to differences in social structure, diet, and behaviour. One of the museum's prized specimens, this tooth is displayed in its own case, set against an orange background and spotlit like a jewel.
Journey 3. Now we're going to enter Zone 2, Becoming Human. With the front edge of the tooth cabinet on your left, continue through Zone 1 for about 7 paces. As you walk underneath an orange arch, there is seating to your left, and a waist-high display case juts into the pathway on your right. Pass the edge of this case and turn right so that you follow the case along its front edge. Where the case ends, you'll be in the central corridor facing Zone 2. You need to cross the central corridor to enter Zone 2. The entrance is quite wide and marked by a blue backlit text panel to the left. The entrance is a little to the right, so cross the corridor on a 45-degree diagonal. You're aiming for a tall pillar. This stands at one end of a waist-high wall with pairs of heads and skulls. It's about 6 or 7 paces. Move beyond the pillar. Extending ahead of you and to the right is the waist-high wall. It's about 6 meters long. The top of the wall isn't continuous, but steps steeply down and up with each pair of heads. The front also steps in and out. Follow the wall to another pillar at the far end. This is where the description will begin. As you face the wall, there's a bench behind you. We describe the 6 pairs of heads and skulls from left to right, so if you explore each one as you listen, you will be moving back the way you have come. You may like to stop the audio now and restart it when you're at the far end of the wall.
Stop 4. Ancient relatives. We come face to face with our ancient relatives. The hominin family, those species that evolved after our branch split from the branch of the chimpanzees, is large. Within it, scientists have placed hominins into different groups based on how closely they think they are related to each other. Each group is known as a genus, and modern humans belong to the genus Homo, which means man in Latin. Most people have heard about the Neanderthals, but over the past 2 million years, there have been at least 8 species of human living in Africa, Asia, and Europe. Our wider family tree encompasses not just people like us, but many other species of ancient humans who represent the next phase of human evolution after the early hominins. Many of these species survived over hundreds of thousands of years, sometimes in competition with others and in the face of vastly changing climates, but the finer details of their lives are often scarce. You're welcome to touch these 12 models that represent just some of the species within our Homo genus. They show the diversity of ancient humans, all of whom, apart from us, are now extinct. Each species is represented by a pair of heads, with a replica skull to the left and a reconstruction of the head to the right. The heads have been reconstructed in white resin using fossil skulls, 3D scans and detailed anatomical knowledge to recreate the muscle, cartilage and skin, giving an accurate impression of how these species might have looked. As you will discover, some of the skulls are more complete than others. Some have only the upper jaw, one has half its skull cap missing, and one is only a fragment. The facial reconstructions are all by Kennis and Kennis.
To the far left of the display, on a hip-high section of wall, the line starts with the skull of Homo erectus, an adult man. Note the huge, heavy brow ridge, low forehead, and relatively small teeth. Homo erectus had a fairly large brain and ranged over Africa, Asia, and possibly Europe. These ancient humans survived for well over 1 million years, dying out within the past 500,000 years. The facial reconstruction to its right uses part of the face of a Homo erectus specimen found on the Indonesian island of Java. The lower jaw is based on a specimen from Algeria. Further to the right, the second skull is of Homo antecessor. This is a replica based on an original some 850,000 years old. It's a fragment of the face of a child who was about 11 years of age. Its surface cracked and its brow ridge jagged and splintered. The upper jaw has some adult teeth, but the back molars are yet to emerge. What we know of this species is based on the partial remains of around 14 individuals from Gran de Lena in Spain. The reconstruction shows that this ancient human species still had a primitive brow ridge, though the cheekbones are less pronounced, more like modern humans.
The third species is Homo heidelbergensis, who had some features similar to earlier Homo erectus, a large brow ridge and low forehead. Other features, such as a flatter face and larger cranium, are more modern and similar to Homo sapiens. This adult male was found in Greece and is possibly 500,000 years old. Believed to be the ancestor of both modern humans and Neanderthals, Homo heidelbergensis emerged around 700,000 years ago and spread across Africa, Asia, and Europe. It was one of the first human species to colonise cooler European latitudes. The fourth example is Homo neanderthalensis. This one, an adult woman, was found in Forbes Quarry, Gibraltar in 1848 and is perhaps 50,000 years old. Neanderthals are one of our closest ancient human relatives. There's a large piece missing at the right side of the skull, but what remains shows recognisable characteristics of this species. A low vaulted cranium with a heavy brow ridge, a receding forehead, large front teeth and a protruding central face. But their brain was about as big as ours and larger than earlier human species. Skilled toolmakers and hunters, the Neanderthals exploited their natural resources and adapted to the changing environment. They survived for some 350,000 years before finally becoming extinct around 40,000 years ago. The penultimate pair is from our own species. This is a Homo sapiens child found in Kavsar Cave in Israel. It's between 90,000 and 120,000 years old. This modern human child was about 13 years old when he or she died. The skull was found in a burial site with red deer antlers placed on the body. Intentional burial has also been documented in the Neanderthals. Scientists think that the humans found at Kavsar Cave date back to an early migration out of Africa by modern humans around 125,000 years ago. At that time, modern humans may have encountered Neanderthal groups who also lived in the region.
The last species is Homo floresiensis, possibly 20,000 years old. Although about the same size as the Homo sapiens child, mature teeth and the proportions of the skull suggest this was a young adult female. Digital 3D shape analysis shows that in some respects the skull is more similar to humans living 1.5 million years ago than it is to modern humans. Homo floresiensis may have evolved from a group of hominins, possibly Homo erectus, who somehow crossed the sea to the Indonesian island of Flores. This species was small, with a brain size similar to that of a chimpanzee. But stone tools found near its remains suggest this species was a capable toolmaker. It may have used stone tools to butcher dwarf elephants that also lived on the island. These people, standing at just over 1 metre tall, were one of the last human species to exist at the same time as ours. A smaller body and brain reduces the demand for energy, and shrinking in size may have been a useful adaptation to island life where resources were limited.
Journey 4. Turn so that the last pair of models of Homo floresiensis is behind you. The next exhibit is directly ahead, some two or three paces across the zone. In a waist-high display case, some 2 metres wide, are six skulls, numbered from the left. We are going to concentrate on number 5, the penultimate skull to the right. It's a Homo heidelbergensis skull, known as the Broken Hill skull. Stop 5. Broken Hill skull. This skull, Homo heidelbergensis, was the first early human fossil discovered in Africa to reveal much about our origins. An adult male, possibly 300,000 years old, It was very nearly lost to science when terrified workers in Zambia's Broken Hill mine came face to face with it in 1921. Luckily, one of them had the courage to rescue the eerie relic. Homo heidelbergensis is thought to have evolved from the species Homo erectus and has been found in Africa and Eurasia. Homo heidelbergensis fossils show a mix of Homo erectus features and later human characteristics. These people had established populations in Africa, Asia, and Europe by about 600,000 years ago. Regional differences began to develop as they adapted to their new environments. The Broken Hill skull is still the finest known example of its kind. A mottled brown colour, it has a wide face, large brow ridge, and a brain capacity as large as many humans today. The upper jaw projects forward like an ape and contains stubs of broken teeth with gaps in between them, some of the oldest evidence of tooth decay in a human. Thick bony ridges at the back of the skull would have supported strong neck muscles. 50 years before this fossil was found, Charles Darwin had suggested that humans had evolved in Africa because African apes were our closest living relatives. This skull showed his intuition was right, but it took until the 1980s for the theory that humans descended from African ancestors to become widely accepted. The skull on display will sometimes be the original and at others an accurate cast, as the original skull is in great demand, an important object for the museum's research.
Journey 5. To reach the next stop, with the Broken Hill skull display case on your right, continue walking through Zone 2 for 12 or so paces. On your right is a display with three elements. A video is projected on the wall at face height. Beneath this, at about hip height, is a narrow shelf on which are two related items, one either side of the projected image. Stop 6. A precision grip. To the left of the shelf, mounted in a clasp, is a touchable replica of a flint hand axe. It's modelled on those found in Boxgrove, West Sussex, England. The original tools were razor sharp, but this one has been blunted for safety, but please still touch it with care. Hand axes such as this were used to strip animal carcasses of meat, often marking the bone in the process. Microscopic analysis of cut marks show they were made before gnawing marks from scavenging wolves and hyenas, suggesting that people probably had to defend their kills from scavenging predators. To the right of the shelf is a glass box, about a metre wide. Inside, picked out by a spotlight, is a large fragment of bone. It's not immediately clear what it could be, a pale, rather beautiful cone shape which seems to flower open towards us, its edges thick and uneven. In fact, the label on a stand to its left identifies this as a fragment from the back of a rhinoceros head. Homo heidelbergensis forced this rhinoceros skull open with precision, probably using a flint tool such as the hand axe to get to the brain inside, which was rich in fat, essential for survival. Our ancient relatives would have harnessed and eaten any part of an animal that could give nutrition and energy.
The video playing on a loop in the projection shows a stone napper making a hand axe. A piece of flint is held on his thigh on an apron of thick hide, and he strikes at it, first with a round stone to take off the rounded stone shell, then with a piece of bone shaped like a small hammer. As thin slivers of stone are removed, the scalloped edge gets sharper and sharper until he's left with a shiny black almond-shaped hand axe. Then the hand axe in close-up, used by the flint napper, as he butchers a dead deer, bloody hands scoring at sinew and, in controlled strokes, cutting the deep red flesh away from the bone. Interspersed with this are images of wildlife, hyenas with sharp teeth chewing and licking clean a scavenged carcass, buffalo roaming grassy plains, a rhino grazing. Animal bones from sites such as Boxgrove show how people butchered and ate large animals such as rhinoceros. Ancient humans needed meat to fuel their powerful bodies and large brains. These early humans probably worked in cooperative groups to defend their kills from scavenging hyenas and wolves. Later sites show how fire and cooking became key tools in the changing human diet around 300,000 years ago. Hardened dental plaque taken from fossilized teeth show plants also formed part of the ancient human diet. These were either eaten directly or from semi-digested material in the stomachs of their prey.
Journey 6. To reach the penultimate stop, with a projection on your right, walk 12 or so paces to the end of this zone, avoiding a display case that juts into your path on your right. You'll be walking towards audio from a cinema space at the end of the zone. Before you reach it, walk underneath an arch, then turn sharp left. There is seating here on your right. 6 more paces will bring you back to the central corridor. Just before you emerge into the corridor, you'll find the exhibit you're looking for on your left. Its case extends all the way down to the floor and has 2 purple flanges made of MDF that taper either side of its front corner. With a case on your left, to your right, a purple backlit panel marks Zone 3, What Makes Us Modern Humans. This stop consists of 2 exhibits, both in full-height display cases, 1 each side of the central corridor. We'll start by describing a model in the case on this side of the corridor before moving to the other, which is diagonally opposite on the other side of the corridor.
Stop 7A, Neanderthal model. In the full-height display case is a freestanding model of a Homo neanderthalensis, a Neanderthal, by Kennis and Kennis reconstructions. The figure is incredibly lifelike. He's naked to show his physique. He's quite short and stocky, with powerful thighs, his skin light brown. He stands, weight on his right hip, his arms held casually behind his back, left wrist cupped in the palm of his right hand. The left wrist sports a piece of leather like a bracelet. Another piece of leather keeps his long matted dark hair back off his low brow. He has a straggly beard cut to stubble over his upper lip and coarse hair over chest and belly and genitals. 2 black lines are painted around his collarbone and shoulders. This Neanderthal man is based on 40,000-year-old remains found at Spee in Belgium. Although this model is bare, in the cold climate of the last glaciation, Neanderthals would have had to wear animal skins to survive. We will never know the details of a Neanderthal's personal life, but we do know from injuries found on their prey that they were skilled hunters, undoubtedly intelligent, and able to share information with others. We know they lived in small groups and were social beings. We don't know if they had a language like ours, but they did have a similar vocal anatomy, and their genetic profile suggests they should have been capable of speech. The way they looked after their sick, for example, and buried their dead, also suggests they were social and even compassionate beings. To reach the second model, stand with your back to the Neanderthal at the front corner of the case. Straight across the corridor is an identical case. It's about 3 paces away.
Stop 7B, Modern Human Model. The second figure, a modern human, is modelled on humans 30,000 years ago. He's taller and less stocky than the Neanderthal, and perhaps more suited to endurance running rather than short, powerful bursts of speed. His body proportions are similar to people who live in hot conditions today. He stands side on to the other man, his upper body twisted towards him, so he looks across his raised right shoulder. His greying hair is shaved close over his forehead at the front, but allowed to grow longer at the back. His right leg is highly decorated, with a black painted design of thick vertical stripes and small chevrons, covering from halfway down his buttock to mid-calf. He chews on a small twig used as a paintbrush. His eyes tiny slits as he stares almost suspicious across the corridor. Modern humans evolved in Africa around 200,000 years ago. Scientists calculate that there were then at least two waves of migration out of Africa, one around 120,000 years ago and another about 60,000 years ago. They did this by tracing the ancestry of non-African people back in time. Fossil remains and DNA markers in people living today suggest all non-Africans are largely or entirely descendants of those people in the second wave. The first wave pioneers seem to have died out somewhere in Asia. No one is certain why our ancestors first migrated out of Africa, but by 13,000 years ago, our species was established in regions as far apart as Australia and South America.
Journey 7. We are now heading to our final exhibit. Keeping the modern human on your right, follow the line of the cabinet and walk another two or three paces past him beyond an opening on your right until you reach a tall, square pillar with a glass panel inset between hip and head height. Stop 8. Against a purple background, two bone objects are spotlit. One to the left is an oval bowl shape, about 20 centimetres long and 15 centimetres wide. It's pale brown, the inside delicately veined. It's actually the top of a Homo sapiens skull, displayed upside down. Cut marks and dents reveal that the skull was thoroughly cleaned of any soft tissue shortly after death. After removing the bones of the face and those of the base of the skull, the remains were painstakingly shaped into this cup. It was found in Gough's Cave, Somerset, England, and is around 14,700 years old. To its right is more evidence of the complex culture of butchering human remains, again found at Gough's Cave. Here is a small fragment from the face of a teenager, a patchy brown portion of upper jaw complete with the bottom of the nose cavity, a shard of left cheekbone and five teeth. There are tiny white cut marks just under the nasal cavity on the right, showing where the flesh was removed. Gough's Cave hides fascinating insights into the culture of the modern humans who lived there around 14,700 years ago. They were hunter-gatherers who had probably come from southwest Europe via Belgium and the Netherlands. The climate was just beginning to warm up after the peak of the last ice age, though a land bridge still connected Britain to mainland Europe. Human bones from several adults and children found in the cave show clear evidence of cannibalism. Shoulder bones and ribs had been cracked open and gnawed to extract marrow. Scientists believe these people were cannibalised as part of a ritual practice.
We've come to the end of the human evolution tour. How humans have evolved is an ancient jigsaw with thousands of fossil pieces. New fossil finds and improving DNA techniques are helping to illuminate the story of our origins. The details lie buried within a complex family tree, stretching back 7 million years. Over this time, climates have changed dramatically. Heavy ice sheets and changing sea levels have transformed the world. And many different human species have come and gone. We Homo sapiens are the only human species left. With 7 billion of us on the planet still evolving in the face of a changing climate, who knows where our story will end? We hope you've enjoyed this audio descriptive guide of the Human Evolution Gallery. The museum's Access and Equality Manager is keen to receive constructive feedback to support improvements to the museum's Access programme. Please send your comments to access@nhm.ac.uk or phone the Access office on 0207 942 5000. You might like to know there are other audio descriptive guides available at the Natural History Museum. As with this one, they're available on the website to be downloaded onto your smartphone or MP3 player before you arrive, or can be streamed via the free Wi-Fi in the gallery. Goodbye, and thanks for listening.
Journey 8. When you're ready to leave, turn so that the final exhibit is behind you. Walk forward 3 or 4 paces past the purple backlit label to reach the central corridor. You can leave the gallery at either end. If you turn left and walk for about 15 or so paces, you'll exit through double doors that are usually open into the brightly lit gift shop. If you turn right and walk for about 25 paces, you'll exit the gallery through the open entrance you came in by, returning into the noisier upper ground floor foyer. Go this way to return to the Exhibition Road entrance. Once you've exited the gallery by the timeline exhibit, turn left and walk for about 15 paces. The wide staircase will be to your right. Take care as the handrails jut out beyond the top step. You can carry on straight ahead for the cafe, otherwise turn right. 3 steps down will take you to the semicircular landing. If you have used the handrail, keeping it on your right, walk ahead on a slight diagonal to your left to find the handrail that's in the centre of the next flight down. 15 steps descend to the lower ground floor foyer. At the bottom of the stairs, the exit doors are about 9 or 10 paces straight ahead. The cloakroom is to the left of these. As you leave the museum, there are 2 sets of double glass doors leading out to Exhibition Road. Goodbye, and thanks for listening.